Application whitelisting. What is it? Do you need it? And how can you put it into your MSP practice? We're going to talk about this topic and more on today's MSP Zone. This is your host, Charles Weaver.
You're entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Happy Friday, everyone. It is Friday, finally. Can you believe it? A very exciting program today. We are going to be talking to someone who's actually been on the program before. He's going to be talking about something a little bit more technical. Don't worry, it's not going to get too deep in the weeds, but we're going to be talking about something that is part of a multi-layered approach that MSPs can and probably should be already doing. If you're not doing it already, probably now is the time to think about it. And we're talking about application whitelisting in the context of how that fits into an evolving methodology for MSP delivery for prevention and preventing specifically against cyber attacks and a number of other things. And we're going to be talking to Corey Munson, who is Vice President of Sales with PCmatic. Corey, welcome back to the MSP Zone.
Thanks for having us again, Charles.
Okay, let's just dive right in. But for those listeners out there who are saying, well, okay, I remember what blacklisting was, right? I remember back in the 50s, I remember what blacklisting of email, traditionally email, that's what we associate with the blacklisting of threat related stuff coming in. Describe what application whitelisting is for in a simplistic way.
Historically, application whitelisting has always been thought of as it's the security strategy that involves an admin creating or maintaining a list of files or applications that they trust, and only allowing those applications to run on a given endpoint, really blocking everything else. And not new, like you said, it's been around for a long time, but it's also come with some baggage and some, I don't want to say misconceptions. It's definitely come with a few things that have probably steered people away from it becoming a more important part of their security stack.
So let's just have a compare and contrast, right? So 20 years ago, the philosophy, as I recall it, was you take, if it was email, let's just stick with email, or maybe it was firewall or perimeter security settings, right? You would have that set up, and then you would block, and you would blacklist, you would mark over as this is not something that you want to get again, and right, and that would be your kind of DMZ or your list of bad things that should not come into the network or into your email server. Now we're thinking of flipping that and saying, we're going to block everything except for the things that we approve. I mean, is that essentially what we're talking about?
That's exactly it. I mean, we're talking about default deny. We're talking about zero trust. And maybe zero trust hasn't typically been thought of as more of an endpoint type of strategy or term, but that's exactly where it's headed. It's flipping it on its head, recognizing the weakness as it relates to protecting against malware and ransomware and things like that the blacklist approach has, a signature-based approach. And like you said, just flipping it on its head and only allowing trusted or known applications to run.
So, I mean, other than it being some, some people might think a pessimistic view of our world, but it really sounds necessary, because I remember when, again, 20 years ago, we would say, I don't want to miss important emails. I don't want to miss out on important communications or things. Therefore, blacklisting made sense at that time. Are we now, in your opinion, at a point where people, A, have a little bit too much in terms of inbound, communication and noise, and that this is really just the safer approach to say, we're going to block everything unless it's something that I really, really need and we've already approved of and we know it's good?
I think we've hit that point. I mean, let's take a look at the fact that, what is the number typically? Every 50 seconds, some new malware strain evolves or evolves into something else. So the idea that we can have some sort of signature list or blacklist that's constantly uploaded to endpoints, and we're using that as the foundation to stop malware from getting into these systems, it's just simply no longer practical, right? That's why we've seen the movement towards AI and behavior type of analysis. This is simply another better kind of next, we can't even call it next gen, right? Because it's been around so long, but a better gold standard for locking these endpoints down and protecting against what we just can't keep up with old technology.
So that you got to the heart of my next question, which is it might be new technology, and we're going to be talking about what you guys are doing over at PCmatic here shortly, but it really is a philosophical change, right? I mean, it's not that we're talking, except for the AI, mention, it really is just a methodology shift in the way we are approaching security at the perimeter.
Definitely. And unfortunately, some of the baggage that has historically gone along with application whitelisting, I've had conversations with folks that have deployed application whitelisting, and they talk about it being even a cultural shift internally, right? That's one of the things we've been working to fight against, is there a way to make this an easier lift, even for smaller IT shops, right? Because it is recognized as the gold standard now. It's recognized as best practice. But can it be done without all the baggage that comes with it?
So this, all right, this brings up a whole series of follow-up questions, which we may not be able to get to everything, but let's talk about some specific examples, because I think what you said just implicates BYOD, right? Bring your own device. We are already seeing, we're in the middle of, right, a massive global remote work shift that could potentially stay with us for a very long time. Talk to us about how application whitelisting fits into and plays into the BYOD plus new remote worker environment we find ourselves in.
I think it's twofold, right? We can, one, hope that many of these folks that have been part of the mass migration to work from home, they've been equipped, hopefully they've been equipped with a work issued device that's well locked down, and maybe that includes application whitelisting. And I think there's an argument to be made that that's necessary. But, before we went on air, I mentioned the fact that just 24 hours ago, we sent out a survey to those who are working from home asking some security related questions. We've got 4,000 responses less than 24 hours later. And right now we know that 60% of those who say they're working from home are using a personal device. So I think that opens up the separate conversation, is if they're not using a work issue device or using a personal device, is there an opportunity to provide those folks with some sort of tool at home, similar to what we're doing with application whitelisting to harden that endpoint at home as well? So I think that it's this BYOD gone wild is what I've been talking about it as. I think it's a definite opportunity to improve endpoint security and protect against what these folks are faced with at home right now.
So this raises another question of device management coupled with this new remote work reality we find ourselves in, and then BYOD is the third component. I remember 10 years ago, at MSP World, a lot of MSPs saying, on the topic of BYOD, don't fight it. It's going to come. There's nothing you can do about it. Your clients are just going to do it. I don't know if I still believe in that. I don't know if I want to give up on that, but device management practices aside, let's talk about, and I want to hear from you, how application whitelisting fits into the BYOD, and the sprawling, multi-cloud work environment most organizations find themselves in today.
I think it fits in with this recognition that, again, there's an inherent weakness in our traditional antivirus approach, even if we just simply look at it from a malware anti-ransomware standpoint, right? the fundamental weakness and flaws in those traditional approaches that were created a long time ago. And taking this more default deny zero trust approach with these devices at home, or BYOD, maybe they will be able to bring them into the office at some point and being able to both manage them, but also really keep a tighter grip on what's actually executing on these endpoints. You know, we know that 90% of this malware is delivered through email, right? And simple clicks on fake UPS receipts and FedEx receipts. If you can put some sort of preventative tool in place that guards against that at a real basic level and have it be economical and efficient to manage, it only seems logical. We've invested a lot of time and energy and conversation around detect and respond. I think there's an argument to be made that the preventative side of things has sort of been ignored. And this is that opportunity to re-engage that, I think.
So let's paint a picture for the audience out there. You know, 20 years ago, for those old timers out there in the audience still remember 20 years ago, and you had a picture of the traditional corporate network, right? You had the physical server, which was on site. You had probably a firewall, you know, router protecting that physical perimeter largely, and then maybe, depending on what time frame you're talking about, you had some sort of cloud-based, they didn't call it cloud, but you know, it was a cloud or a hosted-based email filtration system, right? Like an antivirus or some related thing. What does it look like today? What should MSPs be looking like and developing as they look at basically a completely demolished notion of a physical office, right? For most of the MSPs out there practicing today, they're dealing with an office that no longer exists.
Yeah, I think, and this goes back to our survey, there's a couple of things to recognize. One, obviously, that these people are increasingly using their personal devices and all the implications that go along with that. But you know, one of the other questions we included in the survey, and I'm just looking at it now, we've just crossed 4,000 responses. 66% of these people say they haven't updated their home Wi-Fi password since they began working from home. So, right. So how many layers as an MSP as you're trying to address these people working from home, you know, can we break this into? We've got network issues potentially.
That's scary.
Right. We've got the endpoint level. Are they using any type of antivirus on that personal device? If they are using an antivirus, when was it last updated? How good is it? Does it include something like application whitelisting? Is it that strong? Not to mention, you know, basic cyber hygiene, not to mention the fact that maybe they're combining work and personal use on the same device. I think there are a lot of layers to this work from home that we're just now beginning to unpack and understand.
I mean, you've just articulated what I think is a global, you know, almost a leveling of the end user community, meaning that, you know, once you remove everybody from the office, the corporate office, they are, and everyone's now treated the same. They're at a home network using home Wi-Fi. They're using maybe a mixture of business and personal devices, but at least, you know, maybe let's say half of those devices at home, right? Probably more, are not owned by the corporation, and they're not managed by the corporation, right? So we've got a Wild West effect that could be potentially devastating moving forward.
I think you're spot on, and I'm not going to bore you with more of this survey stuff, but I find it fascinating, and we're blown away by the response. But right now we're looking at 47% of these people say that they haven't received any employer provided IT support while they've been working from home. So you're exactly right. It is the Wild West. And I think it creates a whole new subset of opportunity for MSPs to figure out how exactly they can address that.
So you said, wait, I want to back that up. You said, yep. 47%, that's almost half of the responses from your survey said that they are getting no internal IT support from their company related to work at home.
Correct.
Strategy, security.
Correct.
That's I think that's scary, and B, what the heck are the MSPs waiting for?
Right. Right. Exactly. Unfortunately, it is the Wild West. And, you know, there was even a LinkedIn thread this morning that was addressing an article that predicted the largest cyber attack in history will happen in the next 6 months. And, you know, part of my response is, well, maybe there are glaring holes. Work from home and this mass migration to work from home has exposed this. How we address this in the short term now will really dictate what happens in 6 months from now. And, you know, the migration has happened, but now how do we address these security holes, and where do MSPs fit in that? I think it's a massive opportunity.
All right. So First of all, I'd love to have you back when your survey is ready, and we'd love to talk to you about some of those results if you'd like to come back on the program.
Absolutely.
I'd like to talk about PC-Matic, because I think everyone's probably on board and saying, yeah, all right, we're in on application whitelisting. We get it. You know, good. I don't think a lot of people you've been at MSP World, you've been in the MSP community for a number of years, but PC-Matic has been around for quite a long time. And you actually have, a pretty good reputation. You know, you had a lot of commercials, right? I used to see you guys on commercial. I still do. On TV, and it was, you know, maintain your home PC, you know, get your PC working faster. So it was kind of a residential push, but over maybe the last 10 years or at least, you guys have been really pushing into the MSP market. Talk to us today about where PC-Matic is, and not just your approach to what application whitelisting, what's your approach and go-to-market strategy now today related to the channel?
You know, we've really evolved right along. I tell people we've really evolved right along with the Windows PC, right? 20 years ago, our founder was originally the senior vice president at Gateway, right? So if you remember having your first PC delivered in a cow-spotted box, he was connected to that. I happened to work for his organization back then. But as he left Gateway, one of his responsibilities there was global support, which if you remember how large Gateway was at the time.
Massive.
And there were a lot of Windows boxes. His organization was responsible for supporting, and he saw the cost of support going, you know, through the roof, and revenue basically was flat. So he came out of Gateway looking for ways to optimize and allow people to really troubleshoot their own Windows devices, because those Windows machines, you know, they didn't age well. And we really carved out that niche of being a resource and a product for people that wanted to do that. Over time, as those Windows machines became more efficient, we really turned our focus to the security side of things, knowing that there were glaring weaknesses there, knowing there were fundamental weaknesses in traditional signature-based antivirus. So that's where we really spent our research and development efforts, were around developing an application whitelisting-based solution that could be easily deployed, either from a consumer perspective or from a B2B perspective. And that's where our big growth has been, on that B2B side. Now, as we've done that, we don't do any of that work direct, any of that sales activity direct. And as we've engaged with those potential customers, we realize that increasingly they're turning to MSPs and MSSPs to provide their IT support. So Our strategy has really been engaging with that MSP community, knowing those are the folks that are servicing the traditional PC-Matic SMB kind of SLED type customer, and figuring out ways to really strengthen our platform and make it easier for MSPs to both use efficiently and effectively, but also to profit from as well.
All right. So I'm on the PC-Matic website, pcmatic.com/MSP. And so I'm looking at this, and, you know, the first question comes up for an MSP is, okay, you know, is this another RMM? This is not another RMM. You guys are decidedly not in the device management, quote unquote, area, but you are addressing some elements of remote management specific to security, but also like device management, device security, RDP controls. I mean, remote administration, I think, is a huge, we've seen a lot of breaches from other, other vendors come in through MSPs that way. Talk to us a little bit about some of those areas that, MSPs might not be familiar with.
Yeah, it's interesting because as we conduct our demos every day with MSPs that aren't familiar with us, we get that question about, are you guys an RMM? Or in some cases, people see all the features we have and refer to it as an RMM Lite. We're working towards integration with all the major RMMs out there. So our intention is to not replace any of them. It's more to be integrated. And what we've really done over the last year is focused on making sure that our MSP partners have an option to pick and choose the features that they're going to most benefit from. So as a full suite, we can get into the application whitelisting piece. We've got tools for managing RDP, but that's a whole other topic of discussion of what kind of threat our open RDP is for work at home. We get into some patch management, some performance optimization features. So we offer this full suite, but we also have the ability to break out pieces of this and simply add them to a security stack that's already in place. So instead of asking a new partner to rip and replace what they have, we'll find a way to make what they're most interested in work with what they already have in place if they want to go that direction.
Complementary, not competitive.
You got it.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
No, it makes sense. So let's talk about some of the use case scenarios here of getting into application whitelisting. You and I had discussed previously about application whitelisting and its implications to some compliance standards, specifically CMMC, which for those of you out there, CMMC is the new federal concept based off of NIST. Corey, so how does application whitelisting fit into NIST and CMMC specifically?
This is where we have spent a lot of time and energy lately at the federal level. We've actually brought in a new and carved out a new federal division to address this directly. Part of the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, CMMC, at least a few levels of that requirement involve whitelisting. So we've been asked to really make sure that our application whitelisting solution is ready for that. And there's some very serious traction around how that would work into the federal space. So we're really encouraged by that and devoting a lot of time and energy there. But from an MSP perspective, I think the most fascinating part is, I even had a conversation as recently as 2 days ago around this, is how these new standards will move from the federal level to the state and local at the very minimum, but I think increasingly into other verticals as well. I had a conversation this week about how CMMC would be the basis for cybersecurity recommendations that the Small Business Administration is going to offer up to small businesses as guidance. So if we know that, and we know at the federal level, potentially the state and local level, and now even at a small business level, that whitelisting is going to be part of the recommendation, if not a mandate, all of a sudden the MSPs have this new opportunity to be able to deliver on that compliance. And fortunately, we feel like we've got a great, efficient, economical, and easy to manage solution for them to be able to include that as part of their product offering. But I wouldn't even be surprised to see this work its way into, qualifying for cybersecurity insurance at some point. What standards are going to be added to that list of requirements before you're approved for a policy? So I really see this as an opportunity for MSPs to get ahead of the curve, have a solution in place that can deliver on the compliance that their customers will be asking for, if not needing.
Yeah, Ed, you bring up a really good point. I mean, the insurance could really drive a lot of this, right? And indirectly, benefit you guys in terms of just, making endpoint remote work environments a lot safer. Because I think the risk potential here is tremendous. But, not to oversimplify it, it sounds like this stuff is eminently solvable, right? I mean, maybe not 100%, but I mean, do you believe that a lot of these threats can be fairly easily prevented with some fairly, you know, readily accessible technologies?
You know, we're never going to be the ones that, that step out and say it's 100% and it's the silver bullet. Do we believe that this is a critical piece of a security stack in the layered approach that everyone talks about? We absolutely do. And I alluded to it earlier. I think a lot of the conversation is has been spent around detect and respond. And the preventative side of things has kind of been overlooked because it's been this operating assumption that it's not a matter of if it's when, right? Well, that's fine, but I think there's also an opportunity to get further in front of this thing. It's the whole left of boom, right? Military doctrine. I think there's things that, that can be done there, and application whitelisting happens to be a piece of that. And again, we think we've got a solution that makes it easier than maybe most people assume application whitelisting can be.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not 100%. It's not a silver bullet. It's a part of a layered approach that MSPs should be doing. I don't know how many MSPs are doing it. I'd be curious if you have some statistics, that you've captured about how much adoption that's getting at the MSP level and at the end user level. But I would wager it's still fairly low, and this is a growth opportunity, not just through this summer, but through the rest of the year and into 2021. Your thoughts?
You know, outside of our universe, it's tough to really gauge the uptick there. You know, there's some other people playing in this space as well. If you go back years, as an example, the Australian government has been mandating application whitelisting for any of their government agencies. I want to say going back five plus years. So it's out there, but the knock traditionally has been the lift is just way too heavy for most IT departments to even consider it. And there was always this risk of false positives, right? Something getting blocked that shouldn't be blocked. And all of a sudden the accounting department is shut down for hours and there's no quick way to address that until the IT admin can jump on it, right? Those two things are, I think, really kept it from being a more widely adopted approach.
Something tells me people's opinions about that are going to change, right? As not only the technology changes, but people's tolerance for having bad things get through, I think that people are going to be more accepting of blocking the few good things by accident rather than just letting the bad stuff through for convenience sake. I could be wrong, but certainly if the governance people in the corporations, I would think would be more for that line of thinking.
I think we're seeing it definitely trend that way. As long as the solution provides an easy way to overcome that. Right, that the harder it is to deal with a false positive from an admin's perspective, the more pushback you're going to get. So that's one of the reasons we've really focused on that is making that easy to deal with if there is something that's being blocked that shouldn't be blocked, instead of having to wait hours to deal with it. Because let's be honest, you can't cripple the production floor for hours just because the software is being a little bit more preventative. And that's why we've spent a lot of our efforts around developing a mechanisms to address that specifically.
PCmatic.com. If you are not a partner, go check them out. They've got some really good technology, some good offerings for MSPs. Again, complementary to a lot of the RMM platforms that are already out there. Corey, love to have you back. Maybe share some of your research findings and data points with us. I think those would be really interesting. I'd personally love to delve into those with you in a future program.
I'd welcome the opportunity. Thanks, Charles.
All right, folks, if you're not already doing it, take a look at application whitelisting. I think there's a lot of merit here. I think it's a good policy to evaluate for your customers. Check it out and let us know what you think. Until next time, this has been Charles Weaver with the MSP Zone, and we will see you later.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you'll get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.